Hello everyone, welcome to edition 127 of the NRF1 podcast, Norfolk's finest Formula One podcast, established 2012. Yeah? I don't know how I keep coming up with these, but we're managing it so far. My name is Michael Bailey. We are here to look back on the first half of the Formula One season. I hope you managed to catch our German Grand Prix review. And now we're going to take a slightly wider view. We're also going to catch up with the latest Formula One news. And once again, I'm joined by Kyle Cumbers, Richard Baxter, and Stephen Rust. And I should probably ask you just quickly for a highlight of the opening half of the season. It's a question I'm springing on you all. So mine is probably all the Mercedes crashes, because they're hilarious. But who wants to go first? Highlight, thing that stands out?
British Grand Prix, just in that sentence.
Yeah, that's fine. I'll take that, Steve.
That is a hell of a shout. I'm going to say the comeback so far of Hamilton.
Love it. Love that as well.
Probably the Austrian accident between Rosberg and Hamilton. That's just brilliant. Last lap, accident, brilliant.
I mean, to be honest, I'd probably have to say the Spanish Grand Prix just to refine it, because in terms of the Mercedes going out and Max Verstappen winning his first race for Red Bull... Whoa! And it's been pretty fun since then, hasn't it? What, to be honest, we've been treated to a great season, because at the start of the year, everyone was completely slating Formula One. And I think, actually, since then, there's been a lot more positive stuff about the racing and the quality of the drivers and the cars and technology and all sorts. So long may that continue. Of course, there's plenty of sticks to beat Formula One with, and we will no doubt go through those. Because before we get stuck into the actual review, let's just touch on some of the latest news and all the messes that Formula One are trying to sort out. Firstly, halos. They're now not going to come in 2017. They're going to hold off, which could be an issue if there's a serious accident between now and when they introduce them, because is that due diligence that they're not bringing in a safety measure? The safety measure isn't working, though, in terms of tests. They want to give it longer. The drivers aren't happy, but should they anticipate that there should be some risk to what they're doing? Horrible subject and situation to deal with, really.
Yeah, but I mean, even if we did have them, are they going to actually prevent an accident? You know, they don't fully cover they only really arguably cover maybe three or four areas. So I mean, if we had a repeat incident where Massa got hit by a piece of debris, I mean, you know, I don't see how that's going to really stop it, unless it hits one of those three posts. I just think they're just to me, just look a waste of time.
Ideally, they'd have done all this testing behind closed doors, but obviously they can't in Formula One these days. But the only problem is, if I came out and said the halo is the one, but they haven't done all the testing. Now they realise that actually we need to do more, we need to develop it in certain ways. And it just all seemed a bit, I said before, it all seems a bit too rushed. And it just needed more time, because every driver needs to spend the first 45 minutes on a Friday and say, okay, this is full testing the halo, and everybody has it, and then they go from there. But just hopefully they can get it right.
I mean, there's an issue that the FIA, if they think it's serious enough, can bring it in anyway. They can do that with safety measures. They don't need FOM, the what would you call it, marketing promoting side of the business. To they don't have to have their agreement if it's important enough.
No, it is a big issue. I mean, The main thing, I think, if you look, the one thing that they're trying to stop hitting the driver's head with the halo, I think, is tyres. But in Formula One, of course, they have the tethers on the wheels, and how often do you actually see a tyre come loose at really high speed that's likely to take anyone out? You don't see it very often at all, but all it takes is that one incident where something goes wrong and it can happen. And I just hope, I think for now it's the right move, but I just hope it's a move that's made that we don't regret just next season. And
indeed, yeah. I mean, I suppose the big question is, you've had two deaths in recent times with Maria Devallotta and, of course, Jules Bianchi, both with blows to the head. And the question is whether a halo would have prevented those kind of impacts. Yeah, I think that's a really difficult question to answer, and I haven't seen anyone say what the answer is to that, and maybe people don't know. Again, that's all part of the thinking that Formula One really needs to get its head around, and quickly, so that once they've done that, they can then actually implement what is going to help long term going forwards. Team radio, not quite as important, just as ridiculous, because we you go from tweaking the rules, making it more stern, or we're going to penalise. Actually, you know what? We're going to scrap it all. forget it. There's no point. Let's just leave it as it was. Unbelievable.
It kind of seemed like teams are constantly complaining about it, so therefore I went, oh, f*** it. You know, just get on with it. Do what you want. And there's sort of... We were all complaining about it a year ago. It was understandable, like the driver coaching. And then they brought it in and it was a bit too far. But then to say, oh, let's get rid of it. Especially when, like, a couple of races ago, Rosberg got a penalty through it and...
Button.
And that's just completely gone.
So surely those penalties should be rescinded, shouldn't they?
It's a bit unfair, isn't it?
It's really unfair. And as you said, the fact they've gone back to the beginning, it's not that they've loosened them. They've literally gone, oh, well, clearly we shouldn't have bothered in the first place.
I think to me, I've said it before, but it just shows there's just no structure with the FIA, and it's just a weak governing body of a motorsport. And, you know, it's sort of... nothing seems to have changed, you know. Yet again, they've brought in a potentially sort of rushed decision, and then they've had to make changes to it, and then people aren't happy, so they've gone, oh, well, just okay, we'll just scrap it then, which is not really the answer, you know. I mean, there should be some sort of consultation going on, you know. I mean, surely they can all agree to a set of principles rather than a case of like, well, if you're going to whinge about it, then we'll just get rid of it. Which just isn't really... it's not constructive at all. It's not democratic at all. It's just useless, which points to a much bigger argument, I think, in my opinion.
I think what the FIA could do is almost is like a fan board.
So like a podcast, maybe.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe just like four people who are big fans of the sport who can report directly to the FIA.
Well, six, seven. We can call more in, Rich. We've got a good sized panel here.
Definitely, and just, you know, who have direct contact with the fans, and they can send their opinions and they can discuss them publicly and then report to the FIA and say, look, this is what the fans are saying, this is what you should do, because that's what's really important to the sport, isn't it?
We really could nail this. I mean it was on exactly the same wavelength. patreon.com/NRF1. Help us build a fund so that we can sort this f***ing sport out, because literally I imagine a lot of people who are listening to us don't that often go, oh, f***'s sake, Steve, what are you going on about? I think most people are like, that makes sense. We're all fans. We all kind of nail it. You know, we all roughly know. No one wanted this complete mess around. And as long as you're reasonable about what you're putting together, at the moment, it seems like the inmates are running the asylum.
Also, I didn't understand the whole process, because it was just a strategies group that met on the Thursday. Because it was just a director from Charlie Whiting, they could then scrap it straight away. But then you got other rules that have to go from the strategy group to all the teams, and then you got the World Motorsport Council and the FIA and all that. And then certain rules don't need that. And it's like, should this just be...
four people?
Well, yeah, just set the rules, and they're the rules. You go racing. If you don't like them, stuff them. You got a race. They're the rules for this year. We'll talk about them next year. And instead of constantly changing them halfway through a year.
And don't forget, this started at the start of the season with qualifying. I mean... yeah. Just a complete litany of b****s. That's what it is. Sort it out. Anyway, let's go on to the next one. Oh, yeah, track limits. Yeah, that's right. It continues because they're now in this right mess of brilliant idea. They brought in the sensors to actually judge when people were going to go over the track limits, because when you drive a car, you can't just drive anywhere. You have to drive the circuit or the track, you know, the bit between the white lines. I cannot understand anyone who goes, well, no, the drivers should be perfectly entitled to just drive over there, over this massive runoff area, because it's quicker. No, drive within, use your skill to stay within the track. Oh my God, I'm so annoyed. And so they've had a complete U-turn. Toto Wolff is basically saying, no, forget it, scrap all track limits, let drivers go where they want. Charlie Whiting is sort of saying, well, no, we can't do that. And I don't know really where we are for Spa.
You see, the thing is before we had this track limits thing, let's not forget that if you did go off the track and gain an advantage, you were made to hand that place back.
Which was fine.
Yeah, which was sort of fine. But then we brought in the track limits, which is like three strikes and you're out type thing. But I just sort of thought, well, what was the need in that? We had a fairly structured system that sort of said if you, you know, gained an advantage, you'd be investigated and you'd be asked to make the place back or drive through penalty or a time penalty, that sort of thing. What was wrong with that? You know, why did we have this new rule come in? I just, because I mean, drivers kind of exceed track limits all the time, you know, through, you know, missing their braking points, various points, or tyres going off, or maybe an issue, or just a general mistake. And I just didn't really, it just seemed stupid to me, totally stupid.
That's the word.
Which made it more complicated by saying choosing certain corners. Like Silverstone, they chose certain corners where you get an advantage. Just, as you say, the white line's the track. And then I think, yeah, in Hungary, it was kind of moving forward. You had sensors, three strikes, boom, you're done. I mean, in MotoGP, I think they have three and then you have to drop back a place. Even if you're 10 seconds down the road, say you're sixth, and 10 seconds ahead, then you have to drop all the way back and give that place up because you've, and they're told on their panel, sorry, you've got to drop a place from race direction. And just make it simple. It can be simple, just make it simple.
Hallelujah, spot on. That is pretty much all the Formula One news we're going to get stuck into. Some suggestions, Mercedes would leave Formula One and then they sort of said they wouldn't, and clearly they're not going to, because why would you spend so much money just to then ditch it, even if you are out on top? And Sauber have new owners. Is that exciting you just a little bit, Rich? The great team Sauber, new owners. Peter Sauber retiring, presumably, although he's kind of retired now anyway.
I'm pleased for them because it would be nice to actually see them more competitive too. To be honest, now they seem to be the slowest team in Formula 1 with Manor overtaking them, which is quite hard to believe when you look where Manor were just, you know, last year, year before that as well. But it's good news for Sauber. Hopefully, I mean, we can see the kind of where they were 2012 kind of season when they were up there with, you know, top 10, getting points, even on the podium a couple of times. It would be really good to have a more competitive team, and hopefully these new owners are doing it for the right reasons and can sort it out.
Has there been any more news on, because apparently some of the people linked to this investment group were the backers for Marcus Ericsson. Has there been any more on that? I don't know,
but good news for Marcus.
He's got a seat for a few years anyway.
And he's got Norfolk roots, so honorary Norfolkian. And maybe he'll make it into the NRF1 Hall of Fame, which hopefully will happen over part two of the season. Should at this point apologise for being a little bit quiet recently, but there's been a lot of work going on. We are going to be fully involved in Audio Boom, which is very exciting. Audio Boom are going to be hosting the podcast. It means that you'll be able to listen to it directly in our Facebook page, as well as in Twitter and on the NRF1 website, nrf1.uk. There's also, via this wondrous Audio Boom, a button that you can press on your laptop or on your device if you have the app, the Audio Boom app, or not, and you can record your own audio that is submitted to us that we can include in the podcast. You can rant to us. Now, if you listen to Steve thinking, yeah, Steve, go off on one, I wish I could do that, now you can. You can join us. It's very so easy and quick to follow. But if you head to nrf1.uk, the podcast page has a little red button there, record. After your race, you can record your own commentary of the race if you want, that we've got all sorts of things. Do it, and we can include it in the podcast, which is brilliant stuff. Rich, you did some commentary, didn't you, for the German Grand Prix?
I did, yeah. It's good fun. It doesn't take much. Just look at what you see on the screen and talk about it.
See, and Rich is a master of it. You could be a master of it too. Lots of stuff on the NRF1 website and various feeds over the summer break. The feeds are, of course, Twitter and Facebook.com. The handles for both are at the NRF1. There'll be our karting video. It's going to go up over the summer break, Kyle. Not that you're on it, but you're too good to be on it. That's the problem. So that will be going up. It's very exciting. And we'll have blogs and all sorts of stuff as well. Our Twitter followers, we've almost got more followers than we are following. Almost. It's like this 600 barrier that we're trying to beat, but we're nearly there. So that's exciting. And loads of other things coming up, of course, too. So let's move on with one little bit, shall we, of tweets and social. And it was an email we had from Derek Ong. Thank you so much for getting in touch, Derek. I'll read it to you. Dear NRF1 presenters, firstly, thanks for putting on a great podcast every fortnight. Well, that's very nice. We shouldn't really repeat praise, so sorry about that. I appreciate your efforts in trying to get Ricciardo's name pronounced correctly, which we now have. I thought that you should know, too, that when Ayrton Senna, as I pronounced it there, came onto the scene in the early 80s in F3, Murray Walker correctly addressed him as Ayrton. but over the years changed it to the now familiar anglicized pronunciation of Ayrton. In Brazil 1994, Murray once again tried to revert to the correct pronunciation of Ayrton, but the British public would have none of it and gave him abuse. That doesn't sound like the British public at all. So Murray switched back to Ayrton. When Murray interviewed Ayrton at a subsequent race, it was in Imola apparently, Ayrton asked Murray why he had reverted back to the incorrect British pronunciation. You see? Why? Because the British public had it wrong. And if you're stateside, you can enjoy that. And you can give the Brits a bit of stick. But there we go. Ayrton Senna, Daniel Ricciardo, deal with it. Thank you so much for your email, Derek. Really appreciate that.
What is the correct pronunciation of Verstappen? Is it Verstappen or is it Verstappen?
Is it a sh? That was my elbow, by the way.
Is it a sh or a s?
Well, I would say it's Verstappen because it sounds a bit Dutch. But in the same way that it probably should be Sebastian Vettel, because you would soften the V in German, I think. But I might be completely wrong. And to be honest, I love this conversation. So if anyone knows the right and wrongs of all this, please get in touch. And of course, you can actually record the correct pronunciations on the Audio Boom record button, which is at nrf1.uk. Send us an email like Derek did, nrf1podcast@gmail.com. You are listening to the NRF1 podcast here on Future Radio in Norwich and, of course, on iTunes and now on Audio Boom too. We need to get on with our half-term report cards so we can go through teams, we can go through drivers. We've got all the standings here. Does anyone want to submit good report cards for a team or a driver over the first half of the season?
I think mostly you'd have to say Verstappen for how he stepped up, you know, to a new team, how he's, you know, won a race. He's really, you know, performed. And to be honest, Red Bull seem to have actually picked up their pace even more since he's joined the team. I don't know if that's just as the season's gone on or if it's actually much to do with him. But I think you have to give him a very high rating. Also, too, I would say his former teammate, Carlos Sainz. He's, you know, he's constantly been in the points, it seems, apart from the last race. But he's always been up there, been performing really well and shown that he's also got the skills. So I think a good solid, probably 8.5 out of 10.
Oh, we've gone numbers. I was wondering if you're going to give grades. You want to give them a grade?
A.
Oof, bang on with the A for those two.
I think my driver of the season would be Carlos Sainz. Just
like I said, driver of the season so far?
Just the consistency, like I said, the points finishes.
Not Max?
No, because he could have taken, with Max going to Red Bull, he could have taken the wrong way and thought, well, maybe I'm never going to get my chance. He's actually improved since then and said, well, actually, I'm going to show you that I'm good and deserve a seat. And he's my driver of the season.
I like that. Good shout. That's a good shout.
If you look what happened to Jean-Éric Vergne when Ricciardo was called up to Red Bull.
Love it, Rich. Top man. I'd probably give an F so far to Williams. I mean, the engine advantage has completely disappeared and now they seem to be left with a dog of an aerodynamic car. How about you, Steve?
It's a difficult.
Good or bad?
Well, for Williams, terrible season, really.
So far, probably
one of the worst ones for many years. But I mean, sort of a driver of the season so far. I mean, it's difficult, really. I mean, taking the Mercedes drivers out of equation. I mean, to not say something other than Verstappen. I mean, you sort of look across the teams, and they've been sort of fairly even in terms of consistency. So I think it's difficult, really. In not staying with Verstappen, you could say Lewis Hamilton for turning it around, you know, from a difficult start to winning, six of the last seven races, something like that.
A
lot of them, yes, basically, all in July.
If we were giving grades to Kimi and Seb, what would they be? Because at the moment, Kimi is ahead of Sebastian Vettel in the driver standings by 2 points. No one saw that coming, I bet.
I would have to say a solid D minus.
Four.
Both of them.
Ooh. Same for both.
Yeah. They're, you know, mainly, I'd have to say because of the car.
What would you give Ferrari?
Probably E. Ah. But, the drivers have done their best with not a great car, it seems. It's got worse as the season's gone on for them. Raikkonen is actually showing the pace that we all know he has. Because we know he's a quick driver, we know how good he can be, but he actually seems to be showing that pace. And as you say, beating Vettel in the championship so far, I think for a Formula World champion, that's what you want to see. And it seems to be probably the most consistent he's been in probably a good 5 years or so.
Any more we want to give? I mean, Haas started off the season very well, but they kind of tailed off a bit now, haven't they? That said, Roman Grosjean still got more points than both McLarens.
I'll probably give them as my team of the year. I know I have
Haas. Yeah. Team of the year season so far.
They're a new team.
Yeah. And I suppose there was always going to be a flattening out, wasn't there?
Yeah, I mean, they had such a good start. I mean,
you do have an interest. We should probably
like family links to Haas.
Just get that out of there.
But Grosjean's finished 6th and 5th in the first two races. And
it was a while ago now.
Yeah, but it's still pretty damn good to get 28. Was it 28 points in total? To check mine. Yeah, 28 points in total. That's construct well.
Well, bearing in mind, Renault got 6.
Yeah. I mean, I know they obviously got help from Ferrari, but took advantage of the rules.
Maybe Ferrari should be driving the Haas car.
You never know.
Might do him a favour. Have we missed it? Is there anyone else is desperate to mention further down? I mean, Stoffel Vandoorne is 18th in the driver's standings. He raced once. He's got 1 point. That puts him ahead of Esteban Gutierrez, Julian Palmer, Marcus Ericsson, Felipe Nasr, Rio Harianto, who has actually done okay, I think, Rio. He's competed quite well with Pascal Wehrlein and is still racing, because you were wondering if he would actually turn up in Germany.
Yeah, I don't know if he'll turn up second
anymore. Yeah.
Which would be a shame, because I mean, I thought it was just a money signing, but and Wehrlein has seen the future, seen as the future of Mercedes. He's done really well.
Anyone else wants to mention? No pressure if not.
No, I was just going to say, Manor, they did well. Their cars more competitive than it has been recently, you know, recent seasons, and they got a point again this year already, so they could get a few more second half of the season.
Well, top stuff, gents. If you're out there listening to this and you think, hang on, you haven't mentioned ex-winner Nico Hülkenberg of Le Mans, ex-winner of Le Mans Nico Hülkenberg, Felipe Massa, ooh, Sergio Perez, whoever, Kevin Magnussen perhaps. If there's something we haven't mentioned that you want to give a half-term report to and a nice little grade, you can have several pluses or minuses if you want. I'm not adverse to that. Then obviously get in touch with us over all the usual channels. I'd love to hear your verdicts, and we'll give them a mention in the next podcast if we can squeeze them in, most definitely. Right, next up is the summer break. Goodness me, Formula One does actually shut down for a bit, only for 2 weeks, and then it all starts up, at least in terms of speculation. We've then got Belgium and Italy as back-to-back races, Spa and Monza. What a treat to come back to, and we will, of course, talk plenty more about that, hopefully, when just before the action restarts at the end of August, I believe, isn't it? End of August? Yeah, I'm getting it. Which means, really, all we have left to do is sum up the Prediction League. Now, apologies, as I said, it was a bit of a cobbled-together podcast, although the guys did a brilliant job of helping us out with that as we looked ahead to Germany and reviewed Hungary. Predictions-wise, though, it was quite a busy week. There was some good I had a particularly good performance in Germany. I quite liked my prediction of only one Mercedes engine or car on the podium. That was quite like that one. I was happy with that one. And some of great results from a lot of people. Kieran Cousins did very well in Hungary, as did you, Steve. And Rich, you did pretty well in Germany too.
I've got two right. That's flipping excellent.
See, there you go.
That's flipping excellent for me to get two right.
It is indeed. And it must be said that you had predicted a bird on track in Hungary. I had a great prediction. I gave you half a point for the moth because it was a flying beast.
There was a moth. Yeah, I saw that.
I mean, that was random to see a slow motion shot of a moth during the race, wasn't it, I think?
Yeah, and then the bird seemed to haunt me today, because as I was driving in, I had a bird fly into my windscreen. So
of the Mustang?
Not of the Mustang, oh. of the backup car I've got. So
he's got a backup car. It's like old Formula One, isn't it? I've got a qualifying car I whip out in case any bird flies into me.
Well, it's just a cheap run around that I can use to get into the park and ride and back for work, basically. So it's a 1 litre car. It's more economical.
Wonderful. And Norwich has park and rides. What you know? I think people should be well aware of all this sort of stuff.
One step at a time.
It should also be said that the traffic situation in Norwich is a complete disaster. Yeah. And we'll be hearing from Ben and DT soon enough. So as the standings are Kyle, you're ahead of Steve, but not by a lot. It must be said, it's quite tight out there. I'm third at the moment with Kieran fourth. Sam Todd is in fifth. Rich is sixth. Unlucky Tim Eyre, who ever since he told me that I'd missed his prediction and stopped predicting, down to seventh. Ped's in eighth. Harris is ninth. Johnny Parfit, is he okay still, Kyle? Have you heard
of
him?
I don't know. He's disappeared, isn't he? He started the Parfit prediction.
And he came, left his legacy, and then literally left.
Yeah, disappeared.
Come back, Johnny. You need the points. Then we've got Josh Raymond, who's busy basically walking up mountains, doing stuff at the Edinburgh Festival, and winning kart races. Love you, Josh. But you're terrible at predictions at the moment. And DT's bottom of the pile, but he's a paramedic, so he saves lives. So what are we? Who are we to criticise his Formula One predicting? And of course, there were the season predictions too, but short of me reiterating the fact that I predicted this would be Kimi Raikkonen's final season in Formula One, I'm not going to get that one right, am I? I like those because they're tucked away and we can eke them out of the box at the end of the 2016 Formula One season, which I have a horrible feeling is going to come around really quickly. But that's it. That's our half-season prediction. Yes, Kyle?
Sorry for interrupting. Are we going to make mid-season predictions as we did last year?
We did do that last year, didn't we?
One, didn't we? One each.
One mid-season prediction?
Yeah.
Well, I think now you've suggested it, you should absolutely do that. And that makes me think you've already got one up your sleeve. Your grin is huge.
Pierre Gasly will replace Kvyat and Toro Rosso.
Before the season's done?
Yeah, before the season's done, yeah.
Wow, there you go. It says a man who might know. I don't know. No, he's shaking his head, but I don't trust him.
I'll predict that there will be 24 drivers listed in the Drivers' Championship by the end of the season. So basically, there's 23 at the minute because obviously Van Dorn sat in for Alonso, wasn't it, for one of the races. I'm going to say 24, so someone's going to lose their drive at some point in the second half of the season.
That's exactly 24.
Yeah.
Or at least, yeah, okay.
So not more than 23?
There will be 24 drivers exactly listed.
Oof. Don't worry about the gaps, I can cut them out. Steve?
Lewis Hamilton, the fourth championship.
Oh. End of. That's why Steve tends to win these prediction things, isn't it? End of. Well, I've already predicted Nico isn't going to win it, so I don't think I can do that again. I think we will have at least two races at the end of the season where we already know who the driver's champion is. It could be more. I was tempted to say three. Did I say two? I was tempted to say three, but I think I'll say two. So we won the last two races are Brazil and Abu Dhabi, I would assume. That hasn't changed. And so the race before that is
Mexico.
So we will, by the time the checkered flag falls in Mexico, we will know who the driver's champion is, and of course constructor's champion, because that will get decided before that as well. So what's the race before Mexico?
Texas.
So Austin, Texas. Yeah. We'll know who the constructor's champions are by Texas, and we'll know who the driver's champion is by Mexico. Boom. Deal with that. Fingers crossed, eh? And if you've got any of your, we'd love to hear your mid-season predictions as well, and make them as zany as possible. You know, maybe Sergio Perez is going to literally walk into Ferrari, deck Kimi Raikkonen and say, give me a seat. I don't know. Could happen. You'd probably get a kudos point for that one. Rich is just gutted that he hadn't thought of that one himself. I can see it in his eyes. We're done. That is it for the first half of the 2016 season. Thank you so much for your ears and for listening so far. And we can't wait to hear from you again in the second half of the season. It'll be epic, I'm sure. Kyle, Rich, Steve, thank you so much. Get in touch with us over the usual channels at the NRF1. That's the handle for Twitter and Facebook. nrf1podcast@gmail.com for emails. And of course, nrf1.uk for all the audio boom links and our website. Until the second half of the season, when we look ahead to Spa and Monza. Come on. Come on. How good is that? What a thing to keep you going over the course of the summer break. Until then, goodbye.